Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Give it up, Winklevi. That is the word from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the court's decision Monday to deny reopening the Winklevoss twins' claim that they're entitled to more of the Facebook fortune because, as people who saw The Social Network know, they say it was their idea in the first place. And while the twins elicit very little sympathy, they got about $200 million in cash and stock already, it does give us a chance to ask, when is it the right time to give up your case? What goes into making decisions about when to sue, when to settle, and when to give up and walk away? We want to hear your stories now about how you decided to sue or not to sue, to settle or not, and how you decided to keep going or finally give it up. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Do you regret walking away from your divorce case too easily? They say many women do. Do you regret entering into a medical malpractice lawsuit? How did you decide whether to settle or whether to go to court? Call us up with your stories about how you decided what to do and just how difficult a decision that was. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And as your calls are coming in, Jamie Floyd is here. She's a legal analyst, frequent fill-in host for me on this show. Reserved next Thursday and Friday, by the way. And it's a free country blogger. Welcome back to WNYC, Jamie.
Hello. Happy to talk about this subject.
So here's what Judge Kozinski wrote in his decision about the Winklevoss claim. The Winklevosses are not the first parties bested by a competitor who then seek to gain through litigation what they were unable to achieve in the marketplace, the judge wrote. At some point, litigation must come to an end. That point has now been reached, unquote. But sure enough, the twins' lawyer has since announced that they intend to file a petition for rehearing, what they call en banc, to overturn Kozinski. So what does en banc mean, and how come the judge can't just end the case already?
All right, well, this is a three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit en banc would be the full set of judges. Nine judges would come and hear the entire case again. The argument, essentially a two-hour argument with lawyers on both sides presenting, much as you see the U.S. Supreme Court hear a case, but when you hear an appeal one step below the U.S. Supreme Court, all the judges don't come out, just three judges come out and they hear it, and those three judges decide and one judge writes the opinion. I will say, Brian, that Judge Kozinski is one of the most well-respected judges in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Very conservative. He's known to be very conservative. But when he writes an opinion, you're well advised to listen to what he has to say. So though I don't always agree with him, I have to say that I agree with him in this case. This is probably the time to wrap up this lawsuit and go home.
Do you think that when people are deciding whether to file a lawsuit or continue one, or let's say originally file a lawsuit, mm-hmm. that they don't often take into consideration the emotional toll it takes?
They don't. And they should. And that's what the lawyers are there for, by the way. The lawyers are there to sort of keep you honest, keep you calibrated. And this is in both criminal and civil court, both of which can be extremely emotional. People think criminal court, and that's where all the television programs generally spend their time and energy. But, you know, civil court can be just as emotional and sometimes more so. And I think these Winklevosses, though they were made out to be the heavies in the movie, they probably have a fair amount of emotional stake in this case, as much as, you know, people want to think it's all about greed. They don't want to let go. They just don't want to let go of what they think is their piece of this pie. But look, they got a pretty good piece, and it's time to move on.
Right. Well, it must be emotional on some level, because they've already won enough money to never have to work again
right.
a day in their lives.
Right. At some point, it's not about the money anymore. And it's the job of the lawyers to get you to take a step back and let go and move on, because it can become all-consuming. You know, Brian, there's the old case of Jaundice and Jaundice, of course, a literary fiction of Dickens and Little Dorrit, but it's instructive nonetheless. You can fight and fight for generations and generations, and it all comes to naught, and what you've been fighting for all disappears in the wind, as does your life and livelihood, mm. And what have you been fighting for? No one remembers in the end.
Let's hear some stories. What, I'm sorry, what line were you saying? Was it? What, okay, so we're going to go to Kim in Huntington. Kim, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking the call.
Thank you.
I also agree that at some point you just move on because your life becomes defined by the conflict. And, you know, I myself had intellectual property essentially stolen. I could have pursued a lawsuit, but I would have been in the presence of these people for a really long time. And I'm a writer, and I moved on and wrote something else.
Good for you.
And I think that once an idea has been put in the air, copyright law won't protect it. It will protect the execution of the idea.
Yeah.
And these people had a good idea, and they've gotten well paid for it. But they didn't do the work to create the company.
Thank you for your call, Kim. I appreciate it. Dennis in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi. Dennis, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Tell us your story.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I worked at a graphic design firm, a small graphic design firm. I decided to leave that firm and start my own company. The owner was upset and emotional. In fact, my lawyer said it was more like a divorce case than anything to do with the violation of a non-compete. He had a $2 million firm. He sued me for $140 million. It was ridiculous and frivolous. I was forced to defend myself over 16 months, and it cost me $140,000. And in the end, everybody just walked away. So nobody got anything but the lawyers. And in fact, my lawyer told me on day one, the only people that will get a dime will be the lawyers. Mm. But I had to defend myself. I had no other choice.
Yeah.
Right. And this is the defendant's perspective, which comes from the other side, Jamie.
Yeah. And I can hear in both gentlemen's voices a fair amount of emotion, even though the first caller, Kim, said that he made the choice to move on. I could still hear some emotion in his voice. And then, of course, our second caller, Dennis, a defendant, and he's right. He has no choice but to defend himself. And sometimes people are put in that position where they don't even have the wherewithal to defend themselves, and there they are facing bankruptcy, and they still have to somehow mount a defense. So a lot of emotion, and in many cases, no option but to face the legal system. But I do want to say, Brian, it is called the justice system for a reason. We are too litigious in this society. I think we've become too litigious, but there are times when people are deserving of justice, and they should turn to the court. So we don't want to leave people with the wrong message. It's really a question of when should you turn to the court.
And Dennis, thank you for your call, because I think that the first caller that we heard from, Kim in Huntington, is completely the opposite of the Winklevoss case. If they refuse to settle for enough money to retire on for the rest of their lives, and he didn't even go to court at all to, you know, when he felt that some valuable intellectual property was stolen from him, well, that's the other extreme.
Well, and there are two issues in Winklevoss. We are now at a different stage of the proceedings. They want to go back a step. They made a settlement, and now they want to abrogate the settlement. They want to eliminate the settlement, act as if the settlement never happened. They want to say, wait, do over,
and
no settlement.
Take their chances from zero.
And that's you can't say game over. I didn't do a settlement. We thought better of it. We were deceived. I mean, they're claiming they were deceived if they had some hard evidence of that, maybe.
Yeah.
But essentially, it was just a bad negotiation, even if they are correct in their facts. And so that's completely different than the question of whether or not their original lawsuit had merit. If they chose not to settle, that would be a completely different question, and we might argue whether they should go forward, whether they should not, whether Zuckerberg had stolen their idea. Completely different question from whether now that they have settled, they should be permitted to reopen the lawsuit. And the answer to that question, as Judge Kaczynski so aptly put it, is no. No, they should not be able to reopen. Then we'd have a new second floodgate of litigation. We already have too much litigation.
Barbara in Stamford, you're on WNYC. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. In 1980, my husband died as a result of his exposure to asbestos. Mm. And we were told that we couldn't have our day in court because the way the law was written, you had to bring a lawsuit within 3 years from time of injury.
Mm.
And, of course, asbestos has a very long latency period. He had already left the Brooklyn Navy Yard and was not involved with working with asbestos any longer. Anyway.
What a tragedy. And then you have to watch all those TV ads and subway ads all the time that say, you know, sue for asbestos, right?
Well, we were very fortunate. Stan Levy represented us, and we did have our day in court. After, in 1986, I was myself and many other people were able to lobby the legislature and get a change in the statute.
Wow, good for you.
Yes, limitations, which said you bring a lawsuit within 3 years from discovery.
Good for you.
That you've been injured. And it was extremely satisfying for me. I didn't go to court for a number of reasons. I didn't want, if I lost, I would have been a very bitter woman. And I also felt if I won really big, it would probably ruin my kids.
And in this case, I mean, we were talking about financial damages before you lost your husband.
That's right. And ironically, the bill, Governor Cuomo signed the bill on July 30th, 1986, which would have been our 25th wedding anniversary.
Wow.
So in many ways, lots of people become widows. I felt that in some ways I was fortunate to have something to fight for. And when my lawyer was negotiating with the asbestos companies, he said, you better come up with something reasonable because you know my client. And the lead attorney said, indeed we do. If she wanted to stick it to us, she already has, because we have 1,500 cases we didn't have a year ago.
So horrible tragedy, but at least you were able to turn it to good for other people.
Right.
Barbara, thank you so much for sharing that story with us.
Thank you.
We're almost out of time. Jamie Floyd, I want to just touch one other case in the news. Jonathan Tessini, labor activist, sometimes U.S. Senate candidate, is filing a class lawsuit against the Huffington Post for not paying their bloggers. The lawyer said this is a suit based in common law. It's not a statutory claim and not a contract claim because the Huffington Post never said they would pay the bloggers. They knew they were working for free. What do you think of that suit?
Well, I don't think we really know enough about the suit. A lot of people, of course, have come out against Tessini and in favor of Arianna Huffington, who, of course, is a very popular figure. It's very different, although people are comparing it to the Facebook suit. It's very, very different. The Facebook suit is about a stolen idea, or at its original point was about a stolen idea. The HuffPo suit, whether it has any merit or not, is about unpaid contributions and back payment. And one is about common law, and one would be more about some sort of contractual agreement that the twins had with Zuckerberg. So they're not comparable cases. I don't know that Tessini has anything, but, you know, as is often the case when we talk about lawsuits that are filed, until you actually mire yourself in the paperwork, Brian, and that's when it gets boring for the lawyers. It's fun for the rest of us to talk about these cases reading an article or two, but you really have to get down and dirty in the documents, the complaints,
right. And we
the
have to leave it here because we're completely out of time, from lawsuits that go on and on, even after plenty of money has been awarded, to women who stop their divorce cases before they get justice because they just can't take it anymore. Legal analyst Jamie Floyd, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.